Justin Brenn is a CEO of Redwood Micro and a strong advocate for psilocybin and psilocybin-based therapies. A lot of the therapies that are being tested with psilocybin right now are focusing on big doses or big journeys to help us through big traumatic situations or to help us manage our emotions in a different way. Microdosing has been practiced for a very long time, but it doesn't seem like there is as much research being done on the efficacy of microdosing and how that actually works with the body. And due to that lack of research, it falls under the scrutiny of being considered a placebo effect. So are we actually experiencing something happening within the physiology of our body when we're microdosing, or are we thinking ourselves into, you know, some kind of state? A lot of this conversation revolves around the placebo effect and the strength of our actual mind. If we take a placebo of any sort and we feel the effect of the drug that we thought we were taking, does that mean it's a failure, or do we just now realize we're a little bit stronger than we thought? If we can think ourselves into health in some kind of way, maybe we can understand how strong we are as human beings. So really excited to talk with Justin about this. He's got a wealth of knowledge and very, very passionate about this subject. Hope you get something out of it. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to our show. Today, I have a return guest, a beautiful human being named Justin Brent. Justin was on the show, probably 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago, so it's been a minute. But Justin is the founder of Redwood Micro, and based right now down in Tulum in Mexico area. And in our first conversation, Justin came on and talked about microdosing and the beautiful benefits of microdosing and the microdosing compound that he's come up with and he's been using. And it's just, you know, psilocybin mushrooms have been one of the things in my life that's changed my life, whether it's a big dose or a little dose. It's impacted me in such a beautiful way. And so, but today we're bringing Justin back on to talk about one of my favorite subjects to talk about is the placebo effect. And I love the placebo effect so much because I think it really shows how strong our mind and our body truly is. And one of the things I love about the effectiveness of the placebo effect is how effective it is that drug companies try to ban it from their studies and like toss it out. Like, no, that's just a mistake. How is it a mistake if the placebo effect outweighs the effectiveness of the actual fucking drug? So I'm loving this conversation already, and I love Justin. Yeah. So Justin, thanks for coming back on, brother. Really, really excited to chat with you about this.
Yeah, man, I really appreciate it. And like you said, this is a topic that I'm fascinated with. I debate people daily about this and whether the placebo effect is real, if it's not real, if it works, is it still placebo or is it not placebo?
Right.
You know, there's so much kind of mystery surrounding the placebo effect, and especially when you talk about controlled studies and how they go about it. And I mean, the word placebo actually is Latin. And it comes from, and it means I shall please.
Oh, interesting.
So the word itself is actually saying I shall please. So the placebo effect, the word for this effect is Latin translating to I shall please. So if in your mind you're taking, even if it's placebo, if you know that there's placebo, by definition, you're saying I shall please. So you're putting this into your body saying, even if you're not necessarily saying it, but the word itself, the placebo pill, by definition, is saying, I shall please.
Wow.
So your mind in that instance is converting it into something that will please you in some way, which is better. If you have two controls, one placebo, one drug, the placebo works, but the drug doesn't, does that mean that we're going to throw away the drug and give just the placebo? Or does that mean that people are not going to credit the placebo because, oh, it was placebo?
Where did this come up for you in the conversations that you have? Is it revolving around the microdosing effects or?
Exactly. So for me, it's specifically regarding the microdosing, because there's tons and tons of studies, and I post studies that show and diagrams that clearly show placebo versus psilocybin, images of brains, of connections, these super colorful diagrams. And there's a lot of discrepancy between whether microdosing is placebo versus real, you know, and high dose psilocybin has been very scientifically proven that, that it is much more than placebo, right. That there is placebo at hand, but it's far beyond placebo. Now, the studies that have been done with microdosing, the majority of them, the Imperial College of London, Johns Hopkins, Harvard University, these institutions that are putting hundreds of millions of dollars, not only into psilocybin research, but specifically into microdosing, they've actually come up with a conclusion that some might say that the placebo is just as effective as the drug. So that it's not saying that microdosing isn't effective. And basically what it comes down to is that it kind of, to summarize, is that the type of person that's going to be willing to begin a microdosing journey, they're going to have this openness and this ability and this receptiveness to change. They're already at this point. So they've already done work in their head to where before they take that microdose, they've either heard things from people, they've either done their research, they've read studies, they see the benefits, their friend told them, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So what happens is that there isn't a huge difference between control group and the group that is getting the microdose. Mm-hmm. But what they're saying is that it's not necessarily discrediting the microdose. What it's doing is actually giving more credit to the capacity of the human brain to allow something to change you based on your thoughts and based on your, it's almost kind of like you're alchemizing something in your system. And a lot of people will say that microdosing is BS and that there isn't anything, it's all placebo. And that there is no scientific data that shows that microdosing specifically is increasing these connections, that it is decreasing depression, but that it's about 50-50 in terms of people that receive placebo. So whether it's placebo, there's something specifically about psilocybin and the microdosing, and maybe it's the demographic of the people that are deciding to go about this route, that the placebo effect with microdosing is 10 times stronger and 10 times more prominent than any other substance. So, you know, kind of what the conclusion of that is that the brain chemistry of the person that's taking this microdose, whether it's placebo or not, they've already convinced themselves that they want to be better,
right?
That they're going to be better. So it's working whether it's placebo or not, and there isn't a ton of difference. Now, if you ask me, I don't think there is a difference between placebo or not. If something works, it works.
Right.
Whether it's placebo, whether you receive the sugar pill or whether you receive the microdose, if both of those people at the end of the study come back and say, my depression is gone, or my depression is at a 2 compared to a 10, and it stays that way, I don't think that there needs to be discussion about, oh, that's just placebo, it's not really working. The way that I'm looking at it is, I think that for certain medications, placebo is just as powerful because our mind is more powerful than any of it.
Right.
And if our mind, and if we can convince in our mind that this is going to work, it's going to work to some degree.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not going to give us that full benefit that the microdose does, but man, if anything, all of these placebo microdosing tests, all of these studies, they're proving more than anything the power of our mind and the power of the human mind to be able to create chemical change in your brain based off of thought alone. And that, I mean, that blows my mind. The physiological aspect of the medicine is one thing, but the fact that with this medicine specifically, the placebo is almost just as effective. They're calling it the holy grail of placebo.
Wow.
because they've yet to come across any other medicine that the placebo is as effective.
Well, I think, you know, we need to really understand how powerful our thoughts are. And I think as a community, as a world, we're understanding that. And there's countless tests now that show, I think it was a Harvard study I read a while back that said that I think 70% of our sicknesses come from thoughts, right? We think ourselves 100%. Into sickness, right? And so if we can think ourselves into sickness, why can't we think ourselves out of sickness? And where I liken this to my personal journey is that, like, I know how effective meditation is. And I read about it. I've seen people meditate and all that stuff. And when I first started meditating, by no means was I meditating. I was just sitting down uncomfortably listening to my breath, but I knew something was good about it, right? And I believed that it was going to be beneficial. And so after years of doing that, I finally got into a meditative state. But the journey to get to that meditative state, I still calmed myself down. I still thought myself into a calm state. Right. And it's exact same thing as the placebo effect. If we can think ourselves into the wellness that we need, as much as we can think ourselves into the sickness that we hold, you know, it's that shows how powerful our mind is. And if we can really get out of our own way and start to clean up our consciousness a little bit, you know, there's a guy that I listened to a while back, and he said something one of the most profound things I ever heard. And it was like, you can have all of our traditional five senses working perfectly. We can see right, we can smell, taste, hear, touch, all that stuff, right? But all of that is still being processed through our consciousness. And if our consciousness is depressed or anxious, it doesn't matter how well our senses work, they're going to be processed through that state of mind that we're in. And then that's going to be the feeling that we have. Right. And so if we can start to clean up that state of mind that we're in to where we can accept the stimulants and the sensations that we're seeing as the trueness that they are, then we start to feel that as the trueness that it is. Right. And so if we can clean up that understanding in our brain, then a lot of this stuff just starts to make sense. Right. And if you look at people like there's a guy named Dr. Zach Bush, who does a lot of he's a beautiful human being. He's a triple board certified doctor. And one of the areas that he focuses on is oncology with cancer research. And he looks at cancer research in animals, domesticated animals like horses, dogs, cats, stuff like that, as well as humans. And the treatments that we have are very similar between both, you know, animals and humans, right? There's a tumor, we try to remove it from surgery, or we give a chemotherapy and we, you know, try to do that. The thing is that he cites is that the human beings have about a 30% success rate after that cancer has been removed, right? Whereas animals have about a 70% success rate, right? And so one of the hypotheses that he's working with is that consciousness that we hold. We as human beings love stories, whether we love them or we just identify with them. And when we hear the story of cancer, we become cancer. Like if I get that diagnosis, all of a sudden, like the tumor starts to grow even larger. It starts to spread faster because now we believe the story that we've been told, right? Yeah. Why can't we believe a different story, right? Why can't we believe that we've thought the cancer out of us, right? Joe Dispenza put his fucking back together by thought, right? And it's like, this is stuff that's out there. It's not like nobody's trying to make money off this shit. It's just like, hey, no, human beings, guess how fucking strong you are. You can do this all yourself. Like if my guts are hanging out, take me to a surgeon, right? But if I'm not feeling good internally, let's try to think about this stuff, right? Let's try to get our heads wrapped around this shit.
You know, and that's, it couldn't have been said any better, you know, and especially when it comes, you know, like, people that will completely discredit placebo for whatever reason, you know, and I think what it shows us is that we actually have the ability to do whatever, to get out of or change the chemistry in our mind with just our mind, if we're willing to do it, you know what I mean? And I think the problem lies in the fact that in order for someone to get to the point where they're saying, okay, I'm going to try to microdose psilocybin, they've probably already tried numerous things to get out of their depression, their anxiety, whatever, without success. So then they come to this, and whether the microdose itself is doing it, or whether it's them taking the microdose and telling themselves that it's doing it, it's still doing it. It's still working. You know what I mean? And I think that we can use this not just for psilocybin, but across the board. And I think we can use it to show that that power can be used even with the strongest of things, you know, for example, addiction, anxiety, depression, the things that people are struggling with day to day that believe that they need a pill to get out, to stop feeling this way or to get away from that. They need to believe that they can do it mentally before they give the pill a chance. And if they can, even if they are taking a pill, if they don't believe that it's going to happen without that pill, it's not going to happen with the pill.
Right.
And that's kind of where this placebo effect kind of intertwines with the actual effect of the drug, because it is a bit of a mix of both.
Right.
Because you can't go into anything. Let's say you get prescribed something and, oh, this isn't going to work. I'll take it, but it's not, I already know it's not going to work. This is bullshit. My uncle took it. It didn't work for him, but I'll take it. You've already canceled out 50% of the effects of that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas if you go in and you go, oh, this is going to work. I know this is going to work. I'm going to go get this. I'm going to take this. This is going to work. This is going to get my health up to this, blah, blah, blah. Whether or not, maybe you might not get to that 100% to where you want, but I promise you, you're going to get further than the person that said, this is never going to work. I'm going to take it, but this isn't going to work.
Right.
Because your mind is, your mind is more powerful than any chemical, pharmaceutical there is out there. We have the ability, all of those pharmaceuticals are pumping neurotransmitters that we're creating that we can actually alchemize ourselves in our brain. We just want something to do it for us.
Right.
You know, and it's like the serotonin, the dopamine, all of these neurotransmitters, they're firing. We have them. We're filled with it. We just need to figure out and learn different ways for them to cross and ways to access them. And not give all of the credit to these Western medicine pharmaceuticals to do the work. Some scientists or other kind of names in the mycology industry, they like to talk down on microdosing specifically. You know, it's kind of it's like a theme. It's this kind of like, oh, microdosing, it's BS. It's all placebo. And if you ask me, hey. It's not all placebo. I know it's not all placebo. B, even if it were all placebo, but it was creating the change that it's creating in myself and thousands of people that have taken it, then I'm completely okay with it being placebo.
Right.
It's a lot of this self-improvement. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, here's a quote from the Imperial College study, and basically what it says is our findings confirm some of the beneficial psychological effects of microdosing from anecdotal reports and observational studies, such as improved sense of well-being and life satisfaction. However, we see the exact same improvements amongst participants taking placebos. This suggests the improvements may not be due to the pharmacological action of the drug, but can be explained by the physiological action in the participant's mindset.
Right, right. Well, actually, I have a real life example of that. So there's this the client that I've been working with for years now, probably 5 years. And this human is trying their hardest, right? They're going through the process, they're in therapy, they're in AA, they're seeing me as an energy worker, things like that. And I've seen great strides from this person over the past 5 years of you know, understanding where the trauma is, unraveling all this stuff. And about 2 years ago, she brought to me the idea of microdosing. And with, you know, an addictive background, things like that, you know, I'm very cautious and I, you know, make sure that it's not the addict talking, that it's something that is medicinal only, blah, blah, blah. And so we've been taking our time, you know, this person's been doing her research and, you know, we've been conversating and it's been about 2 years. And then, so now we've graduated to microdosing sessions, right? And so this person came in, took the
micro. Which I think is a great... Beautiful. It's a great way to start. It's a really, really, really good thing to do, and a great thing to get people
to do it. And so we got her to take the medicine about an hour before her session, came in later down, and we were doing energy work, so Reiki, sound healing, stuff like that. And just from the moment that person walked in and sat in my office, from the 5 years that I've known her, this was the most stable, the most calm, the most pragmatic I've ever seen this human being ever.
Before anything happened,
before we even did energy work, she'd just taken the medicine, right? She took a 100 milligram microdose. That's it.
Okay.
And the noticeable difference in her demeanor was night and day from when I've been working with this person. And now, you know, and we're doing it on a monthly basis now. So once a month she sits with the medicine, she'll have a session with me and another healer. And the amount of work that this person's been able to get under her belt with just these two or three sessions has been night and day from the 5 years we've been together. Now, you can call that placebo. You can call that the effectiveness of the actual, it doesn't fucking matter. This person is being healed. And that's all that really matters. And seeing like how much trauma this person is now being able to understand, and how she can not rationalize, but understand why it's happened. Right. And the lessons that are learned from it. Whereas before, all it was the trauma. I don't fucking care whether or not that works, didn't work. I don't care. This person is now on this path that is like jet setted way before, way, way beyond what everything that we've ever worked on. And what it really brings up to me and what you're talking about with, you know, a lot of the medicines that we have, the Western medicines that we have, you know, I liken it to a lot of the, you know, when religion first got popularized in about 2000 years ago, right? We went from being able to speak to God ourselves, right? I can just talk to God. I can have an orgasm and feel fucking God, right? We went from that modality of that openness to now, no, I have to go through a priest. I have to go through a nun. I have to go through an intermediary to talk to God. And that's the same thing with this, right? We have to go to an intermediary for our own healing. We can't just heal ourselves, which I think is complete bullshit. You know, one of the things that was taught to me early on in my practice when I started holding space for clients is that you're not doing anything special, Adam. They are their own healer. The human in front of you has the full ability to heal themselves. You're holding the space. You're helping with the modalities. You're helping build that confidence so they can realize how strong they are as a human. And that scares the medical system because it's big money, right? There's big money to be made in medical. We're not in a healing. Yeah, we're not in a business to heal people. We're in a business to keep people sick because that's how people continue to make their fucking millions of dollars, right? And so when we can understand that and we can remove ourselves from that system, and if you need the system, great, it's there for you. It's already fucking built, right? It's shown that it's there. The effectiveness of it is up to you. Right? Because if we can really understand that we can cure our depression, we can cure our anxiety, we can cure a lot of this stuff by changing the way that we think or changing the way that we present ourselves to life or finding more natural remedies to help assist us in our lives instead of creating 1,000 other side effects that we're going to have to fucking conquer anyways. You know, I think that's where it's at. That's the magic. Like, we can do this stuff ourselves. We can talk to God. We can heal our bodies. We can do all this shit. We just forgot. Right? Because we've been told we can't, right? We've generations and generations of beating us down to think that we have to have somebody else to show us God, to show us our strength. Nope. It's right here. It's in us this entire time.
And adding to that, not only to the God, but also to the medicine. We've been having people saying that, no, not only can you not talk to God to heal yourself, you have to go through an intermediary, but you can't even heal the slightest of sickness that you have without going to a doctor, without going to this or that, you know? And I think that, you know, I personally believe that any one human power, any one human being, the human brain has the power to heal. I mean, of course, I'm not like you said, if my guts are hanging out of my stomach, my leg snapped in half, that's one thing. But I think we have the power in our brain to legitimately and really heal 99% of what's going on in our head just through thought, through breathing, through practices, and yeah, maybe some natural substances. But I actually think that we can get to a point where we don't even need these substances anymore. That we have the power. It's just a matter of getting to the point where we're able to learn how to access this and learn how to use that power to our advantage.
Yeah.
You know, and use the human brain for what it is. I mean, it's incredible what it can do to the extent that you can take something that isn't something and your brain is going to tell you that it's something else, and you're going to actually feel the effects of something that wasn't even put into your body, you know, and it's just, I mean, it blows my mind. And like you said, I don't care who or what it is that's getting someone out of this dark place, or what it is that's healing someone. If you're healing and your healing consists of taking a sugar pill every day, but in your head, you've convinced yourself that's your magic pill. And 4 months later, you're healed of all your stuff, but because you've convinced yourself you've been taking this magic pill, but it's really just a sugar pill. Then you've healed yourself. Which is why I almost think that we need to kind of get rid of the word placebo effect completely.
Right.
And just call it, you know, a secondary effect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, because placebo effect, people just associate with not working. People associate with fake.
It's a failure.
It's a failure. It's all in your mind. It didn't work. But it's like, but if it's all in your mind, didn't it work?
Exactly. You know, actually, I have this conversation with people a lot, and you know, in the spiritual world, we have a lot of rituals, talismans, things like that. That exactly. Some people put 100% belief in. Some people are like, you carry fucking stones in your pockets. That's crazy, right? And to be fair, it kind of fucking is, right? I get it. You know, we put all these oils on us, and you know, things like that. But you know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and I love being challenged, right? Please challenge me, because it helps me understand like what I do and don't understand. If I'm talking out of my ass, you know, that then I'll start to understand that. I have a really good friend of mine. He's actually the co-host of my other podcast that I do, and I just love his brutal honesty. He's very opposite of me. He's very you know, not in the spiritual realm. He's more, you know, earthbound. Okay. And you know, like rules and laws and all this shit, right? But good, I fucking love him. And he talked to me one day, and he's like, do you really think that black stone in your pocket is absorbing negative energy? Do you really think that's actually happening? I'm like, okay, I get that. All right. Let's just take this, right? So he's talking about black tourmaline. So black tourmaline, great little stone for absorbing negative energies. And I carry it around in my pocket all the time because we're around negative shit and it just helps me out. And so I asked him, I'm like, okay, so I get what you're saying. You know, there's not scientific proof unless you look at the Taoists about how they figured out what stones did what. You know, they used to eat them and that was fucking crazy. right? Like a lot of people died from poisoning. A lot of Taoists died from poisoning back in the day when they were figuring this stuff out. But, you know, okay, so say there's no scientific proof that this black tourmaline is going to absorb negative energy, but by you taking this and putting it in your pocket, you're thinking, you're saying, hey, okay, so anything that negative that comes around me is going to be absorbed into this stone. You're creating, right? You're creating your own belief system around that. Now, whether or not that fucking works, that's up to you, right? That doesn't really matter, because you're creating your belief system around it, right? And so like you're saying, it's the placebo effect, right? If I put this, if I feel anxious and I put lavender oil on my palms and I smell the lavender oil, and that makes me think that I'm calming myself down, even if there's no neurological response to it, but hey, fucking cares, right? That's what's working. Right. And we create enough of those rituals. We create enough of that saging ourselves. That's going to be another one. You know, some people can look at sage and be like, that is the most ridiculous thing. You're covering yourself in smoke and you're thinking that's cleansing yourself. But it's the act of doing it and the thought behind it that's saying, hey, there's things on me that shouldn't be here. So I'm going to wave this wand around me and I'm going to light this smoke. And by doing that, I'm going to feel better. I don't care what you think. This makes me happy. This makes me feel good. Fucking great, man. That's all that matters, right?
100%. And I had a debate with someone on Instagram recently about this, because it's, you know, it's I'm not going to mention a name, but he's a guy who he's big in the mycology kind of industry, but he does a lot of satire. It's a lot of, he does like satirical videos, and a lot of times his satirical videos, they're funny, and he's a media guy. So he knows how to make the videos. You know what I mean? Yeah. But he's not a mycologist. He's not a psychologist. He's not a psychiatrist. He's not any of this. And he likes to attack microdosing. Mm. He likes to attack not only microdosing, but he likes to attack the movement of microdosing and these brands that are pushing it and people that are talking about it. And And he does it in these ways, and he posted something, and it was a satirical video of basically him just kind of talking shit on microdosing. Like, oh, I'm going to take this little mini blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to feel anything, but I'm going to go make a million blah, 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 whatever. And it was talking about placebo. And I mentioned, I said, look, I get where you're coming from, you know, placebo or not. I said, but 99% of all participants that have been in any microdosing study have, whether it was placebo or not, 99% reported improvement in behavior, mood, cognition, awareness within for at least 2 weeks following that experience. Hmm. So whether you're saying it's placebo or not is irrelevant. This is a way for you to kind of just discredit microdosing. Name one other substance where 99% of participants in a study that have taken placebo or non-placebo are going to all report this self-improvement and this improvement in behavior and mood and awareness and creativity. And basically, you know, what it's kind of saying is that those participants in these microdosing trials, they're already at this level mentally and emotionally where even if you were to ask them, they probably wouldn't care whether they were getting the placebo or not, because they're at this study. They have all this excitement of going to this study, this clinical study. They get this or that. Before the study, before the last study from Imperial College London came out, they actually, the authors of the study, before the study happened, made this prediction. And they said, we predict that all participants are likely to experience this self-improvement and this in the sense of mood enhancement, whether they took a real microdose or a placebo.
Yeah.
And this was kind of their hypothesis going into it, just based off of the type of medicine that it is because it's not like this Prozac. It's something that generally people have a positive outlook on.
Yeah.
And that's kind of this, you know, and that's kind of where I try to take everyone with this, is that, you know, we need to get away from putting credit towards anything more than our own brain and our own powers and our own thoughts. And yeah, you can give credit to the microdose that you took or to the mushrooms that showed you that you needed to do this to heal that, or you needed to get into the gym and start doing this, or you need to start journaling more because you had a vision that, oh my God, if I journal every day, then this anxiety that I'm feeling is going to go away. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, actually, I want to touch on that a little bit. I'm happy you brought that up, the journaling side. And what I want to do is I want to expand on that a little bit. And so I've been reading this, just doing a lot of research on that topic in general. And you could, look at it as biohacking, as, these practices that we keep hearing about, like, I got to get 10,000 steps in before breakfast, and I got to do this. I got to do a breath work. I got to do all these things now that we can do to optimize our health, right? And my the research I've been doing on this, and I really love the way that people are approaching this, is in a way this is hurting us more than it's helping us, because now we're able to create more negative stories around the shit that we're not doing to optimize ourselves, rather than just and it's like, a lot of times we barely have the energy to do the day-to-day shit that we got to do, right? If you got kids, do the kid stuff, got the work stuff, got the whatever things you do, right? And now we have these voices in our head saying, if you want to optimize your life, sleep 8 hours a day, take 10,000 steps before breakfast, make sure you go on a walk after lunch, you're going to do some breath work in between, right? Cold plunge, all this shit. And it's like, okay, now all this stuff has this whatever clinical proven that it's going to work. And I do, I do like that all these things are there. What I don't like is now people have another negative thing to hold over their heads. Now I know that I'm going to be healthy if I take 10,000 steps, but I can't get up early enough to do that. I know I'm going to be healthy if I could take a cold plunge. It's good for my joints, but I don't have time to do that. And now we have all this negative self-talk, right? And it's basically the nocebo effect, right? So the placebo is taking something and feeling positive. The nocebo is basically making ourselves feel shitty for no reason. Right. And so it shows us how strong our mind is. Our mind can think ourselves into depression. It can also think ourselves out of depression. Right. But now, like with all this information that's coming in, and I kind of liken it to how, you know, there's that, you know, our grandparents, our great grandparents grew up, you know, drinking whiskey for breakfast, smoking cigarettes at the age of 9, all this shit, live till they're 90, 100 years old. Now, like, if I look at a cigarette, I'm going to probably start coughing and die when I'm 50. Right. But I think a lot of that too is that collective consciousness of the story that we've now put into it, right? We now see on a large scale how negative, you know, cigarettes can be as far as cancer, how negative alcoholism can be as cirrhosis of the liver, all this shit. But is that the thing that happens to a small or an outlier of people? Is that understanding now permeating the consciousness of everybody? And now we're opening ourselves up to the idea that that's a thing, an illness that we can have. If we smoke a cigarette, I'm going to get cancer, right? And so again, that's the strength of our mind. Like, we're believing ourselves into these illnesses. And why can't we believe ourselves out of these illnesses in the same vein?
It's wild. And it's so much easier for people to believe themselves into illnesses and out of, because people, it's a phenomenon. It's easier for people to be negative.
Yes.
It's as crazy as it sounds. It's just, that's the way it is. People have an easier time seeing the dark side of things than seeing the light side of things.
Yep.
In general, you know, and when it comes to, especially with sicknesses, you know, when you go to a doctor, and you hear this all the time, like, you know, and I always go back to this, the same Paul Stamets story with his mother and the cancer that she was diagnosed, stage 4 breast cancer. You have 6 months maximum to live. Hmm. And Paul Stamets basically said, no, I don't know. I'm not accepting this. This is not it. This isn't going to be it. Took her off of all the medication that she was on from the doctors and just loaded her up with medicinal mushrooms. And 10 years later, she's still alive.
Wow.
You know, and that was, I mean, of course the mushroom did a lot, but I also believe that there was so much to it with him, not only him, but because it has to come from the person that has the sickness. Of course, your friend, your mom, your dad, they can wish you, they can do whatever they want.
Yep.
But if you as a person don't really believe it. So he was able to use his knowledge, his power, and his belief to then get another person to be on board with that belief. And that was enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's this thing. And it's interesting, and it goes to health. It goes, but I also think it goes beyond health to all events and situations, you know. And it's just like you start to have this bad feeling about something, and the more you put energy into it, the more you see it happening, the more you see it unfold, the more you see it happen, and then it happens, and you wonder why it happened.
Right. Exactly.
Because for the last 2 weeks, all you were doing was talking about, oh, this is going to happen. This isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. Or this isn't going to arrive. There's going to be an issue. It's going to be broken, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not saying that directly is what's causing it. But we don't know how powerful our consciousness is. We don't.
Right.
We really know so little about it. You know, but we do know that we can manifest. I can't manifest $1 million cash on my table right now, but our mind is more powerful than any medicine there is out there.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of finding the way to use our mind and how to direct it, I think, into these ways and into these kind of areas where we see more light than dark, and whether that means we need assistance, we need people to come share their experience and let us know. But more than anything, what I tell people is not to listen to the negative dialogue that is all around certain things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you talk to 10 people that this one thing didn't work for them, that doesn't mean it's not going to work for you. You know what I mean? And especially, like you said, going back to this whole, the Decebo effect, where you feel bad for not doing things. And now with the way Instagram is, I mean, you go on Instagram for 5 minutes, if you don't feel like you're not doing enough, something's wrong with you, because you've got, you know, 10 wellness influencers. I wake up at 2:15. I'm in the gym by 3, cold plunge by 4. And it's like, I don't know how half of those are real or not.
Right.
But we're living in a society where it's so easy. If you're not strong, you don't have that strong base, that strong foundation of, okay, I am who I am. I have these beliefs. I'm going to live my life with these beliefs. It's so easy to get into that state of feeling like you're not doing enough and you're not doing enough to heal. But you could be meditating every morning, doing your yoga, working out, eating healthy, mm-hmm. but you're not journaling. You're not going out and staring at the sun for 20 minutes. You're not doing every single thing that's in one of these fitness, you know, or wellness influencers routine. So in your head, that's why it's not working, because you're not doing all these things. And it's like, it's, you know, and I don't want to talk negatively on, you know, influencers on social media, because there are some great ones, but it's so ambiguous, and it's such a broad spectrum of this works for this person, this works for that person.
Right.
But the content is being presented in a way of, this is what works.
Well, and to that too, I mean, the influencer side, I gotta comment on that too, because, you know, the best of intentions are usually like, they blow us up, right? And so I'm good friends with a vegan influencer. Like, they're all about the vegan life, posting pictures about veganism and no food, no animal products, all this shit, right? And I've been vegan for about just a little under 10 years, maybe.
Okay.
Now, this person secretly fucking eats meat.
No way.
Because they know that their body needs it, but they won't go out in public and eat a fucking steak, and they won't post about how much their body needs that iron, needs that B12, needs the brain fuel, and they can't go without it. And it's like, you know, you can't create this life and then be that shadowy about it, because if you're out there and you're touting like, hey, 100% vegan will get you there, right? And then behind the scenes, you're eating a fucking steak once a week, once a month, whatever it is. And because you need it, because you realize how beneficial it is to you, that needs to be the story. Because now, again, you're creating a negative thought process in your 100%. Brain. And that's going to create depression, because now you're being shady about what your beliefs are. And if somebody finds out, it's going to be all this big fucking thing, right? So if you were just honest and be like, hey, guess what? I found out that I needed meat, and I'm sorry. I'm going to find the best locally, you know, honestly raised, grass-fed, grass-finished, blah, 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 all this stuff. But I need that in my body. And that's part of my, now that's part of my influence that I have, right? I've
you know,
learned something, and I've adjusted my belief system.
And what's really fascinating about that is they would actually, their following would explode if they did that.
Right.
And they don't think that, because their whole identity is vegan. But people want to see realness. And if they go on there and they go, hey, you know, I needed this, I ate it, I'm not going to take away all my comments about veganism, whatever, but I want to share that if your body is calling for something, to put that into your body. And our bodies need nutrients. We need vitamins, and women even more so need red meat than men. 100%. So when I hear women that don't eat red meat, and then they tell me they're tired all the time and this and that. And I'm not going to be that guy that just go eat a steak. But then you ask them, are you supplementing with iron? No.
Yep.
Are you supplementing with vitamin D? With zinc? No. Okay, so you're essentially, you're withholding very, very, very crucial nutrients to your body to maintain this facade that veganism or whatever it is,
yep,
is the way. And you see it all the time with fitness influencers where you know they're on steroids and they talk about their diet and you're like, oh, it's this diet, that diet, that diet. I've been eating 4,000 calories a day for the last year, going to the gym every day. And I can tell you I've gained maybe 10 pounds of muscle. I mean,
it's hard. It's fucking hard.
It's so hard. It's so hard. And you have all these people that are just making things seem like it's right there at your fingertips. Oh, just do this and that. And you're going to be successful. You're going to be able to make it here or there. And social media is really, it's toxic for that reason, but it also gives, you know, a ton of good information. And I think that what's really important is for people to not just look at everything, take everything and blah, 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 but know your body. Like you said, like your friend, she knew she needed to eat meat, so she ate it.
Right.
And it's the same thing with when it comes to any medicines. It's like, if your body is calling for something, to deny your body of that is, I think, causing more harm, not only to your body, but to your mind.
Right.
Because now you've tricked your mind into thinking, I don't need this, I don't want it. But now you've confused your whole system because your body was calling for it, your mind was calling for it, but your ego said no.
Yep. You just
I'm not doing that.
You bastardized your intuition. Right. You're just like, and that's
exactly.
And I, you know, that to that point too, I think that's one of the biggest problems we have with our over the counter pain medicines, like Tylenol and ibuprofen. Right. So you got acetaminophen and Tylenol, and you got ibuprofen and like Advil. And, you know, there's enough that, you know, we've been using these medicines for long enough now that there's been enough studies out that show that if you continuously take acetaminophen or ibuprofen, the negative effects it has on your nervous system are profound, because not only are you basically telling your body, sorry, that knee pain that we're feeling, don't bother about that. You don't listen to your body. It's fine. We'll just take this pill. It'll mask it. So we're not listening to our bodies, but we're also deadening our senses now. So we're creating a spiritual disconnect between our mind and our body. We're telling us, don't trust what you feel, because that's not really real. Right. But we're also now finding that on a medical, like an provable stance, not just a woo-woo, I feel this way, you're literally deadening your natural senses all the way up to empathy. If you take acetaminophen on a regular basis or ibuprofen, your ability to feel empathy goes down significantly. And that's fucking crazy, wow, man. But if you look at the society that we're in, you know, I've known people that have been taking bear aspirin in their, for blood pressure since the 50s. You know,
every day,
wake up, yeah, little swirl, 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 drink their bear aspirin, good to go. Right. 50 years of that, right? You're doing that for 50 fucking years. You're not going to be in touch with your body. You're not going to be in touch with your mind.
No,
it's creating so much separation. And the power of our mind, again, like we've been talking about, this is one of the things that I talk to my kids about a lot. I can't remember where I read the study at, and it was a study done by a psychiatrist a while back, but they're talking about anxiety and excitement, the way it represents in our body, right? So anxiety, obviously, you know, it's not something we want to be a part of. Anxiety, we try to get rid of. Excitement is like, fuck yeah, let's do this shit. The way that your body receives excitement and anxiety are the exact same. The only difference is how you think about it, right? So if you think about that feeling as it comes up, is like, ooh, I can't wait to do this thing. Like teaching my yoga class this morning, right? Now, I've been teaching for 10 years now. By no means do I not get nervous. I still get nervous, right? Because I care about what I'm doing. But I'm not as like crazy nervous as I used to be. But what really helped me was like when I would get ready for my class, I'm like, oh shit, man, I'm about to go hold space for this amount of people and be in a hot room. I got all this dialogue. I got to, you know, verbatim and all this shit. And I would get like that anxiety ping. But then I read this study and I'm like, okay, well, if that's in me and it's right there, then let me just think about like how excited I am to hold this space and how excited I am for people to explore their practice, explore their bodies. They're not up there for me. They're there for themselves. So if I take me out of it, tick that level over to excitement from anxiety, it changed my life, right? And that's the power of our minds, right? It's how we think about the situation that we're in.
And it's... the fact that you mentioned anxiety specifically is great because I say this all the time. I say anxiety is excitement that's being manifested in another way, because you have nothing to you don't have an outlet for the excitement. So when you feel this anxiety, I just think that the anxiety that we feel is an excitement inside of us to go do something, but we don't know what we want to do, so we have anxiety.
Oh, I love that.
And that's why they and that's why they tell people, oh, you have anxiety, go for a walk. So it's like, if you don't know, if you start to feel this anxiety, instead of saying, oh my God, I'm feeling anxious, like you said, no, don't say that. Flip the switch. I'm feeling super excited right now. I'm feeling super excited. I have so much excitement. What do I want to do? I'm gonna go for a 5-mile walk right now. I'm gonna go to the gym. I'm gonna go work out. I'm not gonna go work out because I'm anxiety. I'm gonna go work out because I'm excited.
Right.
I'm not gonna go take my dog for a walk around the block because the anxiety I'm feeling. I'm doing it because of the excitement I'm feeling. And I recently switched this in my head, and I come from someone that has serious anxiety background. Was on a mountain of anti-anxiety medications. It comes down the line, you know, grandparent, dad. Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, it's in the family. And but I'm the first one to break the curse of the, you know, full-time anxiety meds.
Yeah.
With psilocybin, you know, with the microdosing, you know, of 5-6 years ago. And of course now I still do feel anxiety. You're never going to get to a point in your life where you never feel anxiety. That's just if someone tells you that they never feel anxiety, I don't believe them.
Yeah.
I just don't believe them.
Yeah.
I tell them, you know, then you're living in a fantasy land, or I want to learn under you.
Right.
You be my master. You know, one of the two. But switching that thought of like, because I wake up a lot of the times with anxiety. My anxiety is usually in the morning.
Okay.
And I'll wake up and I'd be really anxious. And it was always this, oh, I'm super anxious. And recently I've started to, and it comes from a book actually, and it's this book right here that I'm reading right now. I highly recommend it. It's called The Obstacle is the Way.
Okay.
By Ryan Holiday. It's a great, great book. And it's based off of Marcus Aurelius. It's his philosophy. And basically what I've gotten out of it, I'm not done with the book. I'm still still reading it. But what I've gotten out of it is basically that in the morning when I feel this anxiety, to no longer convince myself it's anxiety. To no longer wake up and go, oh my God, I have this, and you know, I'm not with my partner right now. So before I'd wake up with someone, so it was like, oh, I have this anxiety, and there'd be someone there. So I was vocalizing it, you know, I was, oh, what's wrong? You know, just every morning. Now I'm waking up myself, and it's a little bit different because I don't have anyone to kind of, oh, what's wrong, or what is it?
Right.
I'm not in my bed saying out loud, oh my God, I have anxiety. What I'm doing now is when I wake up, it's more of like, I'm excited.
Hmm.
I don't have anxiety. I'm excited. I do feel a lot of energy. I do feel what 2 months ago I would have said is anxiety. But right now in this moment, I'm not going to accept that this is anxiety. I'm going to tell myself this is excitement for my day to come and for what's to come.
Yeah.
And basically it's, and it's kind of like the placebo effect of that anxiety, where I've turned the anxiety into an excitement placebo, to where I didn't get the anxiety pill. I got the placebo that is the anti-anxiety.
Yeah.
So I didn't take an anti-anxiety, but I took a placebo that is an anti-anxiety. And sometimes I'll even literally, I'll take like just a capsule that has maybe just ashwagandha or something like that. And I'll tell myself that's the anti-anxiety. I'll say like, oh, I'm going to go take my Xanax, you know, like literally, I mean, word for word, like I'll mentally do it. And there's been times where I've literally like almost had to double check what I took because it's that strong of an effect. When you really truly believe it, to where I take this And it does. I feel it. And then I go out and I'm like, no, I'm not anxious. I'm going to go take my dog for a walk. I'm going to the gym. I'm going to go to the beach. I'm going to go and I'm going to basically get this excitement out of me.
Right.
And then once I feel that sense of kind of calm, it's like, okay, I got the excitement out. Now I can, you know, go focus on whatever it is. And it's not necessarily like a 6-hour thing. Maybe it's just, I need to go for a quick sprint around the block.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and whatever it is, but I think that a lot of people would benefit from flipping that switch in their brain and their mind of anxiety to excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And no longer hold yourself victim to anxiety, but almost give yourself the honor, like the benefit, the advantage of having all this excitement to do something with.
Right.
And it's like, if you have all this excitement and you just go sit on your couch,
yeah,
and scroll on your Instagram and see all these people doing all this stuff, that excitement is going to go back to anxiety.
Yes. Yes.
So God. It's like, what I say is like, do is what you need to do. It's like the anxiety is excitement, and the I guess the treatment or whatever the protocol for the excitement is do.
Yeah.
Is action, you know, and it's helped me so much in the last few months with that and with dealing with that and allowing myself to not feel victim to anxiety, not feel that, oh, I have anxiety every day. I have this, oh, no. Instead, I'm excited every day. I have a lot of excitement. I have a lot of passion. I have a lot of energy. And yeah, I'm not saying that it doesn't still feel like anxiety sometimes, but in my head, it's not anxiety.
Right.
It's different.
Yeah.
And that's what's important. And that's what's important for all these placebo effects, for anything, is that what is important is what you believe in your mind and in your head to be true.
Yes.
That's what's going to come out. And that's what you're going to show up to the world as what you believe you are. And that goes with medicines, with feelings, with anything, you know, yeah. Is that you can use the placebo effect for life.
Right.
For life situations, for feelings, for actions, events, situations. It doesn't have to be this thing that's just used in scientific medicinal terms. You know, there's placebo effect for meditation. There's placebo effect yep. for Reiki. There's placebo effect for sound healing. All of this stuff. Like, you could argue that it's all placebo effect. You could argue that none of it is, but it's all healing.
Yeah.
And it's all helping.
Yeah.
And that's why for me, like, my main thing is just I really am trying to get people to stray from this negative connotation of placebo effect as a bad thing, as a, oh, it doesn't work, it's placebo.
Right.
And then discredit something because of that. And
well, maybe
because
too.
That's what a lot of people are doing.
Yeah. Well, maybe too. I mean, this just came to me, but maybe too, like the placebo effect, maybe the reason why the masses or maybe the governing bodies have such a problem with the placebo effect is because it shows the power of the individual. And we've been averaging people. We've been averaging the masses since I think the 1870s is when we really started to say, like, okay, we're going to look at the human population, take an average of it. So the average human being looks like this, right? The average man looks like this. The average woman looks like this. The average brain looks like this. The average weight is this. The average, we have BMIs, we have all this shit, right? And so we've been averaging humanity since, like I said, 1870s. I think they call it Taylorism back in the days.
Wow, I didn't realize it's been that long.
Yeah, you know, and so like we basically, you know, said, okay, so no, there's not going to be, and where I started doing research on this randomly was fighter pilots. So fighter pilots for a long time, you know, we had the understanding of planes, we got that off the ground, and then we started doing fighter pilots. And I think it was in the 1920s is when they set the standards for the cockpits and fighter pilots. And then in the 1940s, 1950s, when we started coming out with jet propulsion, things changed a little bit, body types changed. But what they were finding is that these pilots were having like almost like a 70% crash rate. Like everybody was crashing. They had actually 17 fighter pilots go down in one day, in a, you know, wow, just from just random accidents. And so they decided, they're like, well, let's look at this shit. And so they looked at like the cockpit design, and they realized that they, so they took, I think it was at the time, there was 4,000 pilots. They took all 4,000 pilots, measured, you know, certain things about everyone, like crotch to knee distance, you know, thumb to eye distance, all these different things that they would have to do for the controls. And so they found an average human and said, okay, this is the average fighter pilot. How many of our 4,000 fighter pilots fit within these 9 qualifiers that we fit for average? Zero out of the 4,000. And so much so, like, I think it was, they found 17% actually only fit 3. Right out of the 4,000. Wow. So basically what they found was there's no real average. There's no real thing as an average person, right? We can take an average, yes, but does anybody fit that average? More likely not, because we're all fucking different. And so all the medicines that we've been doing, that we've been given, have been based off the average. How many? So we had 1,000 people in this trial, and this is the effectiveness that we thought that we figured out. This is the average. Well, who fits that average? Nobody does, right? And so now we're finally getting into that. We're back to the individual. And I think that might be scaring people, to show how strong the individual is, because we are not an average person. There's no real average, right? So when we start to feel the placebo effect, it's like, oh shit, that person is finding their strength. And that might be what's really scary to people, is because you're not under our thumb anymore. You can go do whatever you want to, because you've realized now that you're not the average. You're going to do whatever you need to do, because you found the power within inside you.
100%. And I was just going to say that I actually think that with these clinical microdose and psilocybin studies, that the participants that actually get the placebo, and that you know, that they say that they feel the same sense of improved mood, sense of well-being, they've gotten off of their medications, I actually think they're the ones that have come out more on top, and they have benefited more, because now they have the knowledge that they took a placebo, and they've been able to change their brain chemistry into self-improvement, mood enhancement, and gotten off of these prescription drugs with zero help of the medicine. So it's almost like what it does is it shows these people that have been given the placebo. The people that have got the microdose, I'm sure that they feel good too. But more than anything, like you just said, it's showing the people that are getting placebo that power. And what that does is now that allows them to go, oh my God. So I didn't even get anything. I was able to do this. Now what?
Yeah, what else can I fucking do?
Exactly. What else can I do now? Oh my God.
Yeah.
I just quit. I just got off of 10 years of antidepressants and anti-anxiety after a sugar pill because in my head I thought it was this. You know, and of course, you hope that the majority of those people are able to continue on to that kind of path of self-growth and using their mind. And even if only 50% of them can see the power that basically was given to them, it's almost a gift to have been given the placebo, but still feel those effects. Because when you get the microdose, you know, it's the microdose.
Right.
You get the placebo, you feel all these feelings, and then they tell you it was a placebo. Then you're completely thrown out of whack, and it's like, oh my God, what else is possible?
Yeah, totally. Like, what else can I do?
That was with nothing, you know, and a lot of these studies actually will talk about it, where people, they didn't believe that they had gotten the placebo.
Right.
Because it was that strong of a feeling, and it lasted for not just a day, not just a week, but 2-3 weeks. Mm. You know, where they're going back and they're still claiming that they have these, you know, positive cognitive benefits that they received from it. And I think that as long as we can keep giving the education and providing the information behind it, that placebo or not, people are going to start to realize that our mind is in control of so much more. And even if that is all that comes out of all of these microdosing clinical studies, if in 5 years they've done 100 studies and they decide that microdosing isn't something that they're going to release FDA, and it's not something that to them, you're going to have 10 years worth of people who have realized the power of thought manifestation and our own mind.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't imagine that right there alone. It's like that. And like you said, that's what Big Pharma is afraid of.
Yeah.
That's what the government is afraid of, is people realizing and coming to the conclusion and coming to the realization that I can do all of this. I can without any of this Western medicine. I don't need this psychiatrist. I don't need this. All of this, basically everything that's been told to me is a lie. And I can cure anything and everything within me through thought.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds crazy because people are like, oh, you can't cure cancer. And like you said, the only thing that it's funny because the most serious of the diseases, sicknesses, issues, whatever you want to call them, those are actually the ones I think we have the most power to heal.
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, I snapped my leg in half. Of course, I'm not just going to sit here with my bone sticking out. It's going to heal. It's going to heal. It's going to heal. Like that's a physical thing. So it's a little bit different. You know what I mean? But when we're talking mental health and emotional and these neurotransmitters and chemical levels in our brain, we absolutely have the power to increase the levels in our brain, to send neurotransmitters across, to create connections. We have that ability without the use of anything.
Yep.
With our breath, with talking to God, with journaling, with reading. There's also tools out there like microdosing that can kind of, you know, almost just expedite someone to that point, to where they can see, okay, and like that's why I say microdosing isn't a forever thing. It's there for you to see the right power of your thought, of your brain, of the manifestation. And that's why after you take them for a couple of months and you stop, you realize that things kind of seem the same.
Right.
Because you've conditioned your brain to feeling, perceiving, thinking, and seeing the world in that way. And it doesn't go away. You know what I mean? You just have to keep practicing and just keep going with it and
yeah,
keep believing that we have that power. And I think that's the most important thing, is to not lose that belief that we can do it ourselves. You know, we can get out of it ourselves. Even in the darkest of times, the darkest of depressions, is we can be the placebo effect.
Right.
Our mind can be the placebo effect. And that's basically kind of the ultimate moral of this whole session, if you will, is that our mind, our brain, is our own placebo for whatever we want to use it for.
There you go. Maybe we work to change the word from placebo to the power of the human brain, right? It's just
the power of the human brain.
Power of,
yeah,
the fucking,
exactly,
human brain, just doing it, doing, yeah, what the, it does.
The power of the human brain needs to take over that word, because there is negative connotation with placebo. And I don't like that there's negative connotation, because in theory, that word actually is such a positive thing, and it's like such a powerful,
yeah,
word. And then when you hear it, when you learn the Latin roots, that it actually translates to "I shall please." It's even more of like my goodness. I mean,
it's so beautiful.
It's almost like they don't want to say, they want to say placebo instead of power of our brain, because if they're saying power of your brain versus control substance, people are going to start, that's going to create just a riot.
Right.
Like, what? Power of my brain? This was all like, this was, wasn't placebo. This was the power of my brain that did this.
Mm-hmm. What else am I capable of?
Before it was placebo. exactly. You know what I mean? Yep. And it's like, all you need to do is take that one word out and people, the whole dialogue changes. The whole connotation changes. There's no more negative. Oh no, none of this. It doesn't work. It's all placebo. No, it's the power of our mind works.
Damn straight.
For so many different things. And, you know, and with that, I'll just read you a quote here.
Please.
That, it's actually a quote from Marcus Aurelius that I found absolutely just profound. And basically what it says is, it's the impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So it really shows us that our problems are what get us to move forward. We don't really have problems. Our problems are our advancements.
Yeah.
Our blocks are actually our gates, our gateways. Mm. You know what I mean? And our mind is the root and the source of all that. So it's like, if we can get to our mind and understand that in our mind, that we're able to power through this, we're able to get out of this. We don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to convince ourselves. We just need to say, no, I'm not going to feel this way, and stick with it. That I believe that the power of the mind is more powerful than any substance that we can put into it.
Amen to that, brother. What a beautiful, beautiful way to cap it off, man. So,
and then with that, yes. It's just no more placebo.
There you go.
Let's cut the word out of everyone's, you know, dialogue if possible, and let's just take this negative connotation away from it and know that it's real. It's a thing. It's not a mystery. This is the power of our brain at work. Power of our mind at work.
Definitely, brother. Well, damn, that's awesome. Well, before we wrap up, why don't you let people know where they can find you? I'll put all this stuff in the show notes too, but sometimes people like to hear it. So yeah, where can people find you, learn more about what you do?
Yeah, so you can find me online at www.redwoodmicro.com. I've got all the information regarding product benefits, information regarding ordering, ingredients, kind of the story behind the brand. You can find me on Instagram at official Redwood Micro. That's micro with a Y.
Mm-hmm.
And email redwoodmicro@gmail.com for any and all questions, inquiries, purchase orders, whatever.
Beautiful.
And I'm very available on Instagram. So Instagram is any email. I'm very responsive. You know, usually I'll respond within an hour. And yeah, I'm here for any and all questions throughout too. I'm not just trying to get off the phone as quick as possible. I always tell people, ask me as many questions as you want. You know what I mean? I'm here to push you in the right direction and show you the sources that are available and help you in finding that method or modality that you need.
Yeah. And I have to tell this, you know, when people offer that, don't be like, oh, they're just being nice. No, take them up on it, because these people have good information. They have, if they're willing to give you their ear to talk to, ask questions, please take advantage of it, because man, when you can get the right person to talk to about the stuff that you're kind of questioning about, it can change your entire life. Right. And so Justin is making himself open for that. So please, like, if you got some questions, like this gentleman is full of information. And
please ask away.
Exactly, man. And if we don't know what we're talking about, we'll put you to the right person that does, right? You know, so just please reach out.
I say it with the utmost sincerity. I mean, really, any and all questions, send my way. I know sometimes people are hesitant to ask certain things because they feel bad about some situation in their life, and it's a completely judgment-free zone. I'm here to help push people in the right direction. I'm not here to sell anyone on anything.
Right.
I'm here to educate and make aware and basically, yeah, just show the potential and show the potential of our mind.
Hell yeah.
I want people to realize how powerful we are.
Well, damn straight, brother. Well, Justin, thank you so much, man. I'm so happy to talk with you, and I can't wait to get you back on the show in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for spending time with Justin and I. Please check out the show notes for ways to get in touch with Justin about what he's doing with Redwood Micro or to ask him any questions. When people offer themselves up for the ability to ask questions too, I really highly suggest people take people up on that. Also, if you need to get a hold of me, my information is in the show notes. Please reach out. Let me know I can help. Little basin some love. We'll see you next time.